Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Nikias, we are headed down the stretch of the season. How are you feeling? How are you doing? Done a lot of basketball going on. Tournament's yeah. Going wild. Stanford lost. There's a lot of things happening.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. One, I am doing well, trying to prepare myself for this stretch run. It's going to be a lot, parsing through what's real, what isn't, and then blending that in with like playoff prep since we're right around the corner from that. So that's been fun. On the tournament front, it is a lot of basketball. Two teams are playing on the court. Shots are being taken. Some made, lots of them missed. Turnovers being made. Decisions have been questionable, to say the least. UConn Sweet 16, keeping an eye on it. Also, it's been a lot of college basketball during our watch parties over the past few days. And, it's hoop.
This is my favorite thing about March, is we have discovered that Nikias turns into the grumpiest of people watching college basketball. So when you hear I'm not a draft Nick, you now have a reason.
Like, dog, the people that are in it and that are much smarter than me, like, tell me who's good, and then I can watch that player and kind of verify for myself, like, all right, I'm a little bit higher than they are, I'm a little bit lower than they are, this is what I think can translate versus them, whatever, whatever. Or at absolute worst, I will see y'all at Summer League and I can just get fresh eyes then. I don't know how y'all do it. I don't know how you do it.
we've done it, folks. We found the truth.
I don't know how you do it.
What do you mean? The beauty of the game, the execution.
What beauty?
The movement, the post-ups. Come on. The decision-making, the excitement.
The excitement. Like, the best thing going for college basketball is that, especially during the tournament, is that so many of the innings are close. Because the process is just bad for 37 and a half minutes. Nobody can pull away.
Took us almost 190 episodes, but I found a topic where Nikias sounds older and mustier than me, so I feel pretty good about it.
You know what? I will just sit that in the corner. We will address that at a later date. But yeah, 20 time, NBA stretch run, basketball, woo. Let's talk about the play-in for a moment. We're going to focus on the Eastern Conference in this episode. We'll talk about the West a little bit later in the week. But as we are in the stretch run, that means teams are jockeying for seeds 7 through 10, or I guess 6 through 10, but 7 through 10 specifically. Steve, what do you make of this East race so far before we dig in on individual teams?
I've made my jokes about the Eastern Conference side playing wise with their collective struggles and question marks. But I think every one of these teams has something you can point to that you may not want to deal with, either in a play-in elimination scenario or a playoff series. Now, the tricky part is the top two seeds in the East appear to not be wanting to cooperate with anything.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
I was going to say, just brief aside, a new number two seed in the East. On that note, hello, Philadelphia 76ers, who have just been the best team in basketball since early December. But continue.
Go listen to last week's episode where I talked about the Sixers. If only.
If only indeed.
Anyways, so that's where it gets tricky and that's where it gets fun. Because you could say, hey, I don't know if you want to deal with these teams in a playoff series, but I don't know if any of these teams want to deal with Milwaukee or Philly and or Boston in a series. Like with Miami, they have the potential to be annoying. They have Bam. They have Jimmy. You don't necessarily want to sign up for that. But the Hawks, we're going to talk about them and their flight path here in a little bit. But yeah. They still got Trae Young. So, I mean, you know, it's not the most fun to deal with in that type of scenario. We saw that last year. Toronto, size, length can be annoying. Plenty of issues. But, again, I don't necessarily want to see them with my whole season online for one night. And the Bulls, coming right along, also check the archives. I think I talked to you about that before. Zach LaVine, DeMar, do you really want to deal with that right now? Is that what you want?
No, and it's so funny, and we'll dig in on the Bulls a little bit later in the pod, but it's so funny that the team in the play-in that just looks the best by a substantial margin right now is the team in 10th that only has a game and a half lead on 11 in typical Eastern Conference fashion this year. So that's been funny. But yeah, like I'm with you. Like everybody has either a style of play that can be bothersome in a one-game setting, or they have a star or stars that can throw your game plan over the top rope, which is also terrifying in a one or two game setting. And so let's start with a team with a pair of stars that has been confusing, at the very least been confusing to me all year long. We'll start with the seventh ranked Miami Heat. They are 39-34 as of recording, only a game behind the Brooklyn Nets, six games ahead of the Indiana Washington duo in 11. So they are pretty firmly in play-in, not in real danger of falling out of the playoff picture period right now. Barring a slide, 7-7 since the All-Star break, because of course the offense perked up, then it didn't perk up. Now it's really perking up, and the defense has slid at the same time. Steve, what do you make of this Heat team right now?
Well, I've never hit the highs and lows that you've hit with the Heat this year. I've reserved that for the Clippers. Mm-hmm. As we sat to talk down and dig into them even deeper, I think we did last pod as well. Who are the Heat? Like, this is a team that's 19-10 against the Western Conference and 20-24 against the Eastern Conference. They've won 24 games this season by 5 points or less. That usually gives you a boost, not seven, hoping to get six. Where's the shooting? They're 9-4 when they make 40% or more from three. They only done it 13 times.
Yeah, I was about to say, that's the one.
And it's just felt like this rotating wheel, this push and pull where there's good things. There's a vision. It could get better. But also this, like, Bam Adebayo has taken the leap you want him to take offensively. Jimmy Butler has been very, 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 very good on both ends of the floor. Like, if we go back and say, hey, we're going to live in a world where Bam Adebayo is getting not only help thrown at him, but double teams. We're probably like, oh, Miami, good for you.
Mm-hmm.
But also, teams aren't really cooperating with what Miami wants to do. And as good as Jimmy and Bam are, it's kind of a lot of post-ups and one-on-one play. And if it's not, and you use them together, teams are just like, we will switch. We will drop. Everyone else is staying at home. Have fun.
Mm-hmm.
But in there, they do the little things, like using Jimmy as a screener more. Jimmy versus the person you don't want to guard, Jimmy Butler, is still Miami's best offense, if you ask me. But they don't, like, teams don't want to let Miami get loose. Like, it is a battle for Miami between trying to unlock what they want to do offensively, trying to unlock defenses, trying to create looks, and then those nights where they need to knock those looks down, they don't hit them. What do you do? But on the flip side, you have the post-ups with Jimmy and Bam. You have the slower pace at times. You have the things that could work better in a playoff setting. Can you get matchups for those two? Can you play out of it? Can you put pressure on teams that way? Can you now mix in your movement and your pick and roll and your handoffs? But when you mix in your pick and roll, are teams just going to let Tyler Hero be in a drop? Are they going to move anything? Is Kyle Lowry going to hit shots? Is Gabe Vincent going to hit shots? Are your movement shooters going to hit shots off handoffs? And guess what, man? All that in the past 10 games, they're the number 5 offense in basketball. Help!
Well, I wish it made sense to me too, Steve. You mentioned, like, you don't have the highs and lows with this Heat team. You reserve for the Clippers. Like, I've said it on the pod plenty of times, and the people that know me know. Like, I'm just too close to it sometimes, it feels like, with Miami. And that factors into why the highs are as high as they are and the lows are as low as they are. It's difficult to make sense of it. Because on one hand, it's felt like a lot of the season, the Heat would be better if they make threes. They are not making threes. Process is mostly fine. That's what it is. Surely things will turn around. And then they haven't, and they haven't, and they haven't. And now that they have, and we're looking at a Heat team since the All-Star break that is 24th in defense. When their entire identity, basically since the Eric Spoelstra era, but especially this year since the offense has been bad, they've needed the defense. They have needed the versatility. They have needed the amount of turnovers that they have forced this year. They have ramped up the aggression this year. Some of that's personnel based. Others that just kind of juicing up the effort on that end. And it's also been like a mini counter to what teams are trying to do with Bam when he does switch out. Like, hey, we're going to involve you early. You go stand over there, though, because we want to attack these four. We want to play 404 over here. We want to minimize the effect that you have as a space defender. We also want to make sure you're not the low man or whatever, so you can't also bother things at the rim. Just go stand over there. We got this over here. And that's been successful for a large portion of the season. And so it's just been odd to me to see the offense finally start to hum. Jimmy Butler has been incredible since the All-Star break. He's shooting over 60% from the field, averaging over 25 points per game since the All-Star break. He's been insane. The post-ups, using him as a screener, just the pure ISOs, very low volume, but he's shooting well from three as well. It's always a fun time when those flat-footed jumpers from the corner are just going in. It's like, well, what do we do with Jimmy now? And if all else fails, he is putting a shoulder into your chest. He's putting an elbow into your stomach. He is getting to the free throw line. There isn't much to do with him when he's locked in the way that he is. I just want both things to work at the same time. Give me a three-game stretch in which Miami's offense and their defense looks good at the same time. The fact that we are late in March and I haven't been able to see that has kind of been the most, just from an analysis standpoint, it's been the most frustrating thing.
Now, I hear you there. It would be nice to see the totality of it. The weird part is it seems like Miami's aware of who they are and what they're trying to work to. They just can't hit the notes sometimes. And I go back to the defense and your points on the defense. The defense hasn't been where it needs to be, especially for this team. And when you watch them in man-to-man, you see just weird breakdowns. Like weird breakdowns that Miami usually doesn't make. Like some nights it's forgetting the switch. Some nights it's overhelping. Some nights it's they can't keep the ball in front when they rotate. And that's not usually the Miami deal. It's usually activity. We're going to lock it up. We're going to force turnovers so we can hit the high notes, but sometimes we can't. That doesn't help them. But you also have the scheme versatility. Like we've seen drop. We've seen switch. We've seen aggressive traps. We've seen shows from Kevin Love and et cetera. So they have things in their back pocket. And the other part is, I don't know if you have the numbers in front of you. How much zone have they been using in the second half of the season?
In the second half, I can look that up as you make your next point. But the zone usage has not been what it was in the beginning portion of the season, for sure.
And that's interesting to me. That tells me, again, I've always felt like Miami never wanted the zone to be the thing. They wanted that to be something they could throw out there, something that could supplement. It can, you know, get teams out of rhythm. And it feels like in the second half, they have said, you know what? Let's put that back there. We have to fix this. We got to fix our man-to-man. We got to shore it up. We got to find our rhythm and take these lumps now so that we will be okay down the line. And that's where I fall into the thing of, I keep saying it, Miami can be really annoying in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But because of what we've seen, I don't know if we know how annoying. But at the same time, you have to deal with Jimmy and Bam. And if you're going to keep them out of action, you have to deal with them mucking things up. And that's going to be an interesting push and pull. How do teams try and handle that? What do they try and wiggle? Because Miami, if there's a team that you can trust to execute a game plan defense in the playoffs, it's probably Miami.
Yep, and that's what, to go back to the grander point, like that's what should scare just about anyone. Like, hey, if this team sits down and so we got to lock in on this guy, or this particular action, and we got seven games at most to do it, I don't, like, how many coaches in the East are you giving an advantage over Eric Spoelstra in a playoff series, regardless of what the rosters are? Is there one?
Me, probably not.
Like, I don't think so. And, like, that's terrifying. When you have, if your foundation is Eric Spoelstra, Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo, and your task is to score against that team efficiently to win four games out of seven, that's a scary proposition.
I hear you. Did you find those zone numbers all?
I did. So before the All-Star break, Miami was a shade under shade over 19 possessions per game per second spectrum. Since the All-Star break, around four.
Yep. Look at the eyes and the data lining up.
It has dropped considerably.
Yeah. No, I am here to unite the box score boys and the calculator casuals and the film fanatics.
The film fanatics.
Unity, man. We need more of it. But that's where it gets weird to me, because it's like, okay, we know what Miami could be. We know what the bad is. I don't think we know how good the good could be, to your point earlier. And they don't necessarily have, I don't think they have one thing that's going to all of a sudden pop and make it elevate. You know, if they don't turn it over as much, they probably got a better chance. The defense shores up, they probably got a better chance. They just don't have a lot of margin for error with this group.
Mm-hmm.
And so when it's off, it hurts them, puts them in these dogfights. Now they've been able to fight in them. So I guess my bigger question is there a world where this team is better set up for a play-in or playoff scenario? Or is this a team that needs to try and do whatever it can to avoid the play-in to cash in on the playoffs?
I think I land on, and I think they land on this too, naturally. Like, we need to get to six, or off chance for five, but I don't think they're going to get five. We need to get to six. Because as scary as they can be in a one-game setting, it's hard to trust his offense in a one-game setting too. And so I think any team would just want more bites at the apple. But for Miami, and as boom and busted as the offense has been throughout this entire season, I think they need to, they more than any other team, I feel like, in the play-in, like, they need the playoff series, like, locked in for them to hit their level. Because, again, if you just tell Jimmy Butler, man, all right, y'all got six or seven cracks at it, like, that's a foundation that just made the Eastern Conference Finals last year. And so you can easily talk yourself into it once you get there, but they have to get there. Can we talk about the second unit for a minute?
Tell me about it. Sing the praises of Bam plus the bench. Tell me about Kyle Lowry. Give me some Caleb Martin love. Inject it. Let's go.
It's funny because, like, I have, like, individual players to shout out. Like, you mentioned Caleb Martin. You mentioned Kyle Lowry, who has been playing with some juice since he's been back. Hopefully that continues. And I know the Heat hope that continues as well. And Caleb Martin going from starter to second unit and acting as a consistent source of energy on both ends of the floor. Still driving, still cutting, still knocking down threes, still knocking down those long twos with his foot on the line, because that's just how he shoots. The defense has popped at the point of attack when he's up top. And I just look at the totality of, like, Bam plus bench or Jimmy plus bench, and it still feels like they're short somehow. It still feels like there's a lack of shooting punch missing. Or there's a secondary creator alongside of Bam or Jimmy that could give them a little bit more to really balance out what they're trying to do. Because the Heat still remain a good team with Jimmy and Bam on the floor. But there are still these splits where, okay, if Jimmy's on without Bam, the offense is fine, but the defense tanks. Or if it's Bam plus the bench and no Jimmy, okay, the defense is fine, but the offense is whatever it is. And you already mentioned up top, like, Bam is getting more help shown towards him. He's seeing more double teams now. And so that is a good thing inherently. But if the guard play is shaky around him, in addition to shots not being made, it's hard to make those lineups hit the way that you would want them to in theory.
No, I hear you. Now, I have a question for you.
Okay.
How much of that is, well, both of our movement shooters kind of just disappeared on us. Like, I don't think they counted on Max Strus shooting 33% from three. I don't think they counted on Duncan Robinson shooting 32.9% from three. I don't think that was in the equation. Like, you remember, I don't think they counted on Oladipo shooting 31% from three.
The Depot minutes are really...
Oh, here we go.
They have just been some very shaky minutes with Victor Oladipo. This is not the Victor Oladipo we saw in, what, December, January, within that range where he is an absolute terror defensively, also hitting enough shots from the perimeter, the drives are hitting. It's been very uneven for him. And, like, I don't think they can afford, especially when it's him on with no Jimmy and he gets more of those primary reps, he can't have the stretches where he isn't making shots and he's making bad decisions with the ball. There's just such a snowball effect with him. And I would say some of that also bleeds into like the Max Strus thing. Not blaming Strus for Depot. But I think some of what's happened with Max Strus this year is that he's been overtasked with some of these lineups. And I think like the big stretch with Kyle Lowry out, you move Gabe Vincent up into the starting lineup. You need someone that can carry the ball. If Victor Oladipo isn't there, like Max Strus running more pick and rolls than he has, getting more handoff reps. He's having to make more decisions with the ball. I think that also has led into some of the inconsistent play that he's had this year. And so like trying to get that solidified has been a work in progress for Miami. In addition to Strus hasn't knocked down the same amount of shots, even when spotting up.
I mean, in theory, you should be able to get the kind of lineups you want. Whether it's Bam, whether it's Yurt, whether it's Kevin Love, whether it's Zeller when he comes back, you got options at the five. And in theory, you should be able to go with some combination of what? Caleb, Max, Kyle Lowry, Oladipo. In theory, that sounds like a solid second unit. Unfortunately, because of the uneven play, you don't know what you're getting from who.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of a both ends of the floor type deal. Because if they're not making shots, then okay, our offense is definitely limited because we don't have the quote unquote playmaking. So now we got to put Tyler Hero out there, or we got to keep Bam out there, or we got to put Jimmy out there. But now those guys aren't moving. We're not getting the same movement because we got those guys out there. Now you kind of have a little bit of a yin yang where, yes, this is now our pressure point, but also,
you know, how do we build around said pressure point to where this is a functional lineup on both ends of the floor? And I guess we could transition to a Hero conversation pretty briefly. Like, we touched on most of it during the mailbag last week, but like, I think everything would flow a lot more smoothly if they knew what they were getting from Tyler Hero from night to night, or even quarter to quarter for that matter. Like, I go to the Detroit game in which Miami was able to eke it out because Tyler Hero hit some big shots. But you watch the first three quarters of that game, and I will just say kindly, it was not great play from Tyler Hero on either side of the ball. And so there's that, and then you zoom out with some of the lineups where Tyler Hero's on the floor with Jimmy and Bam on the bench at the same time. And those lineups have not been good this year. And you would hope, especially coming after last year where he wins sixth man of the year, in part because he was able to carry some of those units without those two on the floor, you would hope that would carry over. But like, he hasn't been able to do that consistently, in addition to the role players not playing up to their level this year. And yeah, just kind of breeds into the overall point. Like, you just don't know what you're getting from a lot of these players on any given night.
And I think to a degree, I would say defenses also aren't really cooperating with him. He's pretty much getting the same look in pick and roll. He's going to come off. He's going to have space. They're going to be in a drop. Okay, what's the decision that he's making? Is it shot? Is it engage the big for lob? Is it look for a kick? And that's probably the one area where I'm like, I wish he had grown a little bit more there.
Mm-hmm.
He's out of predetermining his reads like he once was. But now it just kind of feels like he's just dribbling sometimes. And it's like, all right, two dribbles, I'm off. What's here? Like, I remember, I forget which game it was. There was like an empty corner pick and roll. I think it was Bam that was rolling on the right side. Tyler Hero came off. He took two dribbles and then just kicked it to the left corner. And I was like, sir. Like, it's not a bad decision, but also the play was over here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just those kind of things is where you're kind of hoping that his scoring would generate more for them. And we haven't seen the two on the ball like we did before. So now it's either, hey, I hope he's passing and catching, hitting these shots, or dot, dot, dot.
And just to bounce off of that, I believe that was the Chicago game that we were hosting a watch party for during the weekend bonanza, whatever we want to call what that was. But yeah, like, it's just they needed him to be firmly number three. And it's felt more, at least in 2023, I should specify, because first portion of the season, he was really good. I think in the year 2023, it's felt more like, okay, he's number three because that's just where the talent level is, versus he is demanding that kind of attention, or he is producing at that level in a way that bends defenses. And I guess to tie into your point about him getting dropped, like, that's kind of been the disappointing part. It hasn't felt a lot like he's bending defenses.
No.
There are nights in which he gets the coverage and he beats the coverage and he plays well. It feels like it hasn't been that extra step of, we are game planning to take this away, or we are throwing different looks because he's diced this up so many times. And for what they need him to be, he can't be the, if he beats us, then we tip our cap guy. Like, I think that's what, in theory, that's what the role players are for. Like, all right, if Max Strus is making enough reads and pick a roll, then all right, that we can't factor it in. That can't be Tyler Hero.
Well, the thing is, that was Tyler Hero last year. He just come off the bench.
Mm-hmm.
So in that role, yeah, you can do that. Because that's what you're supposed to do off the bench. Come in here, cook, make those plays. No one's adjusted to how they cover Tyler Hero. And now he has to carry a little bit more with that starting unit to a degree. So that's where it's like, okay, how does that bridge go? And to your point, that's where I would like to see him start to bend those defenses a little bit. Slow that first dribble down. Engage the defense. See what happens. Let the play develop.
I got you. Quick question. We'll go to the front court. And how have you felt about the Bam Kevin Love dynamic?
I like it. I think there's a lot more things they can explore. I think they can tap into Love's passing a little bit more. Mainly, I would love to see if teams are just going to switch Kevin Love, then let's throw it to the post and see if they now send two on him or he gets a couple easy ones. But I think there's different ways you can use them. Screener, roller. Obviously, as I mentioned last pod, defense is really not cooperating and just saying we're going to switch everything anyways. But I think there's high-low potential between those two. I think there's, with Love's passing, there's some things they can do. I don't think they've tapped into everything they want to with that pairing. How have you felt about it?
Like, it's been fine for me. Like, we talked about this early, then like the opening weekend or whatever with Kevin Love was there. Like, you want the shooting to pop a little bit more with K-Love. And to your point, like, if there isn't the blend of usage for him, if he's not getting those post-ups sprinkled in, if he's not being used more as just like a post-hub for some of the splits and stuff, if he's just going to be spaced, then the need for him to knock down shots heightens. And so the fact that he hasn't done that at a super high level in Miami is a little bit concerning. But conceptually, like, I think it's been fine. I think, you know, putting him at the level makes sense. Like, you don't want Kevin Love in a drop. You don't really want to switch him. You can switch and double, but I think they would prefer to kind of have him at the level and kind of dictate from there. I think that's mostly been fine. I do think his presence defensively, if he's near the rim, like that, he helps on the glass. If he's not directly involved, and even if he is, like, in theory, that helps Bam stay away or stay close to the rim. But I don't know. I haven't had major issue with the pairing so far.
I think, in theory, it could unlock some more off-ball stuff with Jimmy and Bam together,
mm-hmm.
where you could get some down screens, some slippage, trying to attack some switches that way because of his ability to pass, see what defenses do. So, again, I just think there's stuff that they can add to it. One thing I've been interested in is sometimes you can tell there is a little bit more of a tempo with him because he will move the ball. He will rebound. So he kind of fits in that way. So I think it's just a feeling out period right now. The tricky part is when you know, I think it's nice for Bam to bring the ball up the court and now Kevin Love's one pass away. Now that spacing is a little bit different. So it'll be fun to see that develop.
Be fun to see that develop indeed. We'll just add on that point about the pin downs. Like, it does feel like Bam is getting more of those screens. With guard screening for him, letting him curl in. Like, that's been a nice addition. Just watching his usage grow in general this year has been fun. As I mentioned on last pod, it's still going to be interesting to see, like, what the synergy between him and Jimmy is. Like, even when they're not directly involved together, just where is Bam if Jimmy has the ball? Where is Jimmy when Bam has the ball? And if they're able to kind of mix that in and how Kevin Love affects that. Any closing thoughts on the Heat before we move to the Hawks?
They still have the benefit of that with me. The interesting part, I guess the question I would ask is, we've reached the point where they're okay facing anyone but Milwaukee, right?
Like, I would still say they're okay facing Milwaukee. I don't know if I feel better about that matchup.
Not the way Milwaukee be looking at them.
Well, that's
look, man.
There is an air of never again with Milwaukee. Like, I would pick Milwaukee in that series, but I think how the Heat would view it, like, I think they still feel like they defend Giannis better than most, if not all, teams. And if they are going to be in a drop, like, even if it isn't bending per se, like, that is ideal for their guards to know, okay, we have pockets in theory. And so, like, I think they would still like that matchup. But I think in practice, like, do I see them beat Milwaukee? No. Like, I think of the top three, like, they would feel best about upsetting Philly over, well, honestly, with the way Boston's looked the past month and a half, I don't know.
I know everyone's kind of on the Boston train right now. I would say everyone just relax. It's March. Weird things happen. Mm-hmm. I don't like the switchability from Boston that they could throw at Miami, particularly this group where they can just cause havoc there. So I don't love that. The Philly part's interesting because I wonder if they have enough doubles to just be like, hey, James and Joel, we're going to make this hard for you.
Yeah. I guess the grand theme is that this probably isn't the pick the Heat the upset year just because of what we've seen from all three of those teams. Like, Milwaukee's been just wrote about it today. They've won 20 of their last 24. Philly has been the best team in the NBA since early December. And Boston, up until this recent skid, was the best team in the NBA. And so they've all hit a level to where it's like, oh, if they find it, best of luck to anybody that faces them before we get to round two and they have to start facing each other. All right, let's get into these Atlanta Hawks, who are 35-36 as of recording somewhat early on a Monday afternoon. Three games behind Miami. They are 6-6 since the All-Star break. They just refuse to either rise well above or fall way below 500, which keeps them in the hunt, but also just makes them an infuriating watch sometimes. Like, I shouted out Trae Young on, it was either the last pod or the pod before last, and the game that night is Atlanta just getting blasted in the first quarter. It's like, ah, okay, well, shout out defensive effort, and this is what we get. This is cool. It's fun. It's neat. Makes me feel good inside. The way that this Hawks team has defended as of late is concerning. Because we talked about Atlanta earlier in the year and how bad the defense was. Like, some of it was Clint being out, Clint trying to get back into form. A lot of it is this transition defense is just flat out awful. And they're just never going to have a chance of getting stops if this is going to be the effort after misses or turnovers. And, like, at least statistically, the transition defense has been fine. It's been middle of the pack. The half-court defense is 25th. And a lot of that has been what they've been getting from the interior. It has been, and we were talking about it a little bit before the pod, like, this is not the best that Clint Capella has looked manning the middle. And what's been consistent throughout this Atlanta, his Atlanta stint, is that the defense can perform at, like, top 10 levels when he's on the court and healthy. And it just hasn't been that during his run. And I think that's a big reason why you've seen the minute distribution between him and Onyeka Okongwu. It's getting closer and closer and closer. And I just wonder, like, if Clint can't anchor it, there's still so much that you can poke at with this Atlanta group. Like, I last week I applauded the effort from Trae. He's still not a good defender. There's only one DeJounte. And DeAndre Hunter's getting tough assignments, and he's sub-elite. John Collins isn't ideal to have in the ecosystem. And so if Clint isn't there to clean up a bunch of misses, which, to that point, like, it isn't super fair on him that he has this kind of responsibility. But it also shows if he slips at all, this is what it can look like. Like, he can't clean up everything. And even just within him, like, he hasn't been as airtight. Either just moving in space or when he is in the drop, like, the contests haven't been as strong. Like, there's stuff with him as well. So now it's just led to this. Like, it's nice to see the offense has perked up the way it has. Trey's been incredible. The three-point shooting for DeJounte has slipped, but he's still been able to get to the rim, still been able to get to his mid-range shot. That's helpful. But, man, like, the defense has just been so bad that it almost hasn't mattered.
No, it hasn't mattered. No, the defense has not been good. I think the lowest amount of points they've given up since Snyder came around was 111. Three of the last four games, they give 134 to Boston, 136 to Minnesota, 126 to San Antonio. And that's, like, after giving up 60 in the first half to the Spurs, who dot, dot, dot.
They hooping.
No. They're playing well. They're playing hard. I don't know if they know that they already have an A this season.
Ah, I see.
And maybe you don't need to do the extra credit. But this is why all teams compete all throughout the season. The Hawks.
Way to bring it back in.
Yeah, I'm here. The Hawks feel like, kids get a chore schedule. It's mm-hmm. great for the first week, and then week three or week four.
You know what? It's always fun when Dad Jones Jr. pops on the pod. Wait a minute.
So about them dishes. What's up with that cup?
Yeah, I'll get it.
Okay. All right. It's because I'm looking in the transition defense numbers. My eyes don't like what they do on defense and transition. And I'm seeing more of the possessions where it's a throw ahead, blow by. Everyone stands and watches the kick. And I'm like, uh-oh. I've seen this movie before.
Mm-hmm.
And Clint Capella in the drop, but the drop just doesn't have any oomph to it. It's kind of at the level, backing up, no real contest at the rim. Watch that Spurs game, first three plays, I want to say, just space floater, uncontested. And I was like, wait a minute. Don't tell me this is what it is. So now you throw in the games where teams decide, hey, Trae Young, let's put you in action. Not just on ball, but off ball too. Let's make you do stuff. Hey, John Collins, why don't you close out and move a little bit? Hey, DeAndre Hunter, have fun. DeJounte Murray, you stay over there. Well, what do we do now?
you get the ball from the net. You put one foot out of bounds. You kick it to Trae, and then Trae brings the ball up the floor for the offensive possession. That's what it's felt like.
Man, they don't have that impact defensively. I don't feel like that imprint's put on teams. I don't feel like teams feel them on that end of the floor. It's not like they're completely not trying, but man, you watch the Spurs do that to you in the second half. Come on now. And my other thing is offensively, where are we going? Like when they made this change, I wanted to see, hey, what kind of movement can be added? And I feel like we've seen more empty corner pick and roll with Trae Young. I feel like we've seen DeJounte stay aggressive. I want to see if they mix in some more off-ball movement for Trae Young, which they've done in pieces. Can you get that going? Can you get you moving up? Can you unlock John Collins? I don't know how much of that has happened. Like, they're scoring, but not at a level that is really just, oh, the defense is feeling this pressure. It feels like they're just scoring. Mm-hmm. And that's where it's like, okay, maybe this group is what it is. Because you look just with the starting lineup, we talked about getting DeAndre Hunter more involved. I did not know he was just going to be the movement guy. He's just coming off staggers. He's the one that's getting those. And I'm like, huh, interesting.
Yeah, I'm on the starting lineup. That's kind of, well, ideally you run Trae off of some of those, but
you would think. But yeah, now you got DeJounte and Trae in pick and roll. And that kind of feels like, remember last year when it was like, boy, there's a lot of Trae Young in pick and roll. It feels like that times two sometimes. It's just pick and roll. Well, I ain't got it. Kick. Let's wait 3 seconds. Somebody come scream for me. I either scored or I didn't. I don't like the pick and roll or bust mentality. John Collins, what do they run for John Collins?
Well, come on. He screens sometimes. He gets a post up against a wing sometimes.
There's a key word you use there.
Sometimes.
Yeah. I feel like this man is either getting in transition or he's spaced. I just haven't loved that portion of it. Haven't loved that. So I don't know, man.
Yeah, it's been really disjointed. And even just to bounce off a couple of your points, like, one, it has felt very my turn, your turn-ish. And that's hard to deal with when the majority of your shots are going to come from mid-range on top of that. If you're stagnant and you're also losing the math battle, like, it gets kind of tight. And, like, when you have the players that they have, I mean, again, like, DeJounte can score. Trae Young can absolutely score. Like, it's been enough for them to be a top-tier offense since the All-Star break, at the very least. But to your point, like, does it feel like defenses are flying around and they're struggling to figure out who's closing out to who, who's picking up where, who's helping where? Like, not really. And just looking it up briefly, like, they're 29th in three-point rate since the All-Star break, which, one, is kind of consistent with what they've been all year. Like, they're just a team that doesn't take a bunch of threes. And them being 29th is disappointing, considering like you have a healthier bogey in theory, which quick shout out to the extension. I don't know if you had thoughts on that, but quick shout out to the extension, like to get Sadiq Bey in there. It's been a little disappointing to see like AJ Griffin kind of fall, not necessarily out of the rotation, but he certainly isn't getting the burn or the opportunity that he was getting in the first half of the season. And like in terms of the movement shooting, that would be helpful for what Atlanta needs in that offense. Continue. You're making a face.
I'm intrigued. It seems like one coach played him a lot more.
Yep. I see. I am picking up what you're putting now. That's all right. Yeah, like I just really, how do I want to phrase this? Like, one, I am just worried about the defense. And like, if this is what the level of defense is going to be, like, I don't have serious thoughts about Atlanta as we enter play-in / playoff talk time. Like, it just can't be at this level. The offense, like, they're showing you now that even faulty process can lead to good things because they have good players, which can breed well in a certain context, at least in the play-in situation. Like, Trey can just win you a game. DeJounte can just win you a game. But, like, as far as sustainable offense, it doesn't feel great. And it's weird because, like, we've had conversations about Atlanta throughout the year. Like, very early on, like, huh, Trey playing off DeJounte looks a little bit better than expected. Mm-hmm. And then immediately backslid. And we, you know, the Hawks hire Quinn Snyder. And it's like, hey, look at this opening set where Trey's setting the screen and getting Clint a layup. And it's like, huh, this is interesting. And now we're right back to pick and roll heavy. Trey's got it. Now DeJounte's got it. And like, no, it isn't realistic to expect like a wholesale shift in philosophy offensively mid-season. But you would think it would be a little bit more than this. And I wonder how much of that is just this is short notice versus, okay, this is Quinn versus Quinn has given the directive and the players are defaulting to what they're used to. Like, I don't know how to parse that out, so I don't want to be like reckless and speculate. But like, it's just led to stagnation.
No, I mean, it's a team that still needs to understand how to play with each other to a degree, how to play with that tempo, how to get to drive and kick, how to use each other to open things up. It's great to get buckets, but when things get tough and your 20-point lead is now 7, where do you run it? Those shots don't feel the same. Now, on the flip side, facing a team like this who can get going, not ideal in this scenario. And if we're talking about the defense, outside of the effort that we mentioned, my biggest worry is the lack of scheme versatility. But I felt that way for a little bit with Atlanta because it's like, okay, who's switching? Do you want Clint switching? Do you want John Collins switching?
So really? I don't think
Onyeka.
Yeah, I was about to say, I don't think that really perks up unless Onyeka's on the floor. And like Onyeka has grown defensively. Like I still raise the brow with him just anchoring the 5 for extended stretches. Like I feel better about that than I did last year and the year before. So like it's trending in the right direction. And I think for Atlanta moving forward, like he's just going to be the 5 in the future. Like if we're reaching this point with Clint to where he just can't anchor it, there's just more offensive utility for Onyeka. He's just been good post All-Star break. I just want to give him a shout, period. But I think we're reaching that point to where he's going to end up getting the reins, I feel like. But to your defense point, yeah, I don't think the versatility's there. And then even with the lineups, like it feels like they plug one hole and open up another with some of the stuff that they do. Like you take John Collins out, you get Sadiq Bey in at the 4. Like, all right, fine. We got more spacing. We can do more things. But then the defense is like, well, John isn't a great defender. He can at least give you a vertical contest from the weak side. Like Sadiq isn't really going to give you that. And depending on who he's at, like it's a weird roster. Like this is, and we talked about this a little bit after the Quinn hire. Like I think this is more evaluation period than anything to see, okay, what can we do? What works? And we see the big changes in the offseason. But yeah, like I think Atlanta, I don't think they fall out of the play-in picture. Like I think they're going to be between 8 through 10. I don't view them as particularly dangerous right now. Like maybe that changes with a week and a half of games. And like, okay, they're turning the tide. And I'll say that on this podcast. But right now, like I don't see them as a serious threat. Because like it's felt disjointed on offense. And the defense has slid to a degree that I'm not comfortable with.
You know me. I always like to be a little advocate sometimes. So, I mean, there's a world where, hey, we don't want Trey to get loose, and that opens things up for him. Maybe that's their win. Maybe Trey gets hot, carries him into that seven seed, you know, and now you got to deal with us. Mm-hmm. They do have a versatility with the second unit, you know, being able to bring in Bogdan and Sadiq at the same time, mix and match of players. But they're going to have to make sure they execute offensively, and they're going to have to tighten it up defensively, at least give the effort. You know, if you're not going to execute the scheme, fly around a little bit.
Force somebody into a mistake.
Do more than that. But yeah, I'm intrigued to see what it looks like, because it's still not fun playing in Atlanta for the most part. So,
yeah.
How am I more positive about the Hawks right now? I'm trying, dog. Lee, how did this happen? You were Mr. AVO, and now you're saying Mr. AV no.
Well, that's a good shot. No, I was making a City of Atlanta joke. That's all.
Oh.
Yeah, that was, yeah.
It's fine. Well.
Well.
Okay.
I see. All right. Well, we can move to the ninth seed, the Toronto Raptors, 3.5 games behind Miami. They're 35-37, 7-6 since the All-Star break. 20th in offense. They are 7th in defense. I'm intrigued because they've looked better as of late.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about Jakob Poeltl quite a bit on this pod and what he's done on both ends, what he's opened up as a screener, the activity defensively, also the rim protection defensively. I think that's been helpful. It has been nice to see Fred VanVleet absolutely lose his mind with these pull-ups, with these drives, the playmaking. Like, has he just been their best player post-All-Star break?
I would say since the Poeltl trade, yeah. I wouldn't disagree with that. He just seems unleashed, in rhythm, making the plays, making the reads, because he's actually getting normal coverage. So it's been fun to watch him do that.
I think for me, like, I find myself in a weird place with Fred. It's like, one, I think he's been really good. But two, like, based on the construction of the roster and with this new starting lineup in particular, which has been very good, to be clear. Starting line's been good. They need Fred to a degree that I am uncomfortable with. In order for the lineup to work the way that it does, they need his shooting. And in particular, they need the pull-up shooting. Because Jakob Poeltl has basically replaced Gary Trent Jr. in the starting lineup. And so now Fred is not only the best shooter in the lineup, like, he's the movement guy. Because they don't really, OG can shoot the lead off the ball too, but like, they don't really use him in a lot of the movement stuff. And so, like, I just worry if Fred dips at all as a shooter as we come down the stretch, like what that means for this lineup and what that means for this offense, period. So I have some reservation there that I'm kind of keeping an eye on. I don't know if that's too preemptive or not. But like, that's kind of been in the back of my mind as I've watched this Fred run. Like, he's been really good, but they need that.
I have a question.
Okay.
This is something we've talked about for the majority of the year. Do you feel better about them offensively as a whole? Do you feel like there's more movement? Do you feel like there's more drive and kick? I think we know Jakob has helped a lot of that flow. At the very least, we can get into a pick and roll. We can hit him at the elbow sometimes. Do you feel like it's been better for Pascal, for Scottie Barnes, for OG? Or have they taken a hit?
I think, I don't want to parse this out. I think the offense makes a little bit more sense. And I also feel like it's very much been worse for Pascal. And if it's worse for Pascal and he is the best player on the roster, that presents a bit of a problem. And I think bringing Jakob in has very much helped Fred. I think he's, in a way, like, he's been able to take some pressure off of Scottie as well. And defensively, like, we don't have to talk about what Jakob Poeltl does to help that defense. But I think Jakob Poeltl's presence offensively, it does hinder what Pascal can do. And, like, Pascal's been operating in a phone booth all year long. But now you're asking him to score efficiently in a lineup featuring Scottie Barnes and Jakob Poeltl. And I think it's just been tough for him to find those creases to the same degree. And I think that's where we've led to some wonkiness. And then, you know, when you zoom out, like, Pascal's just been carrying a ridiculous load all year long. Like, he was an early All-NBA shout for me for that reason. Like, he had a ridiculous workload, and he was carrying that efficiently. And so that plus the minute load, like, I think that's kind of wore on him. And now you add in this change of context where now you defense are able to creep in a little bit more and help off guys. In addition to just, like, the style of the offense seeming to change a little bit more. Because they have Jakob, they can run more ball screens, which means that also leads to Pascal being spaced. He hasn't knocked down threes at a high clip this year either. And he definitely hasn't knocked down a high clip post-All-Star break. It's just been a really weird combination of things working against him right now. Like, I think he can still find it, but I don't know how great this shift has been for him in particular. On the bright side, OG has really perked up offensively. It's nice that he's gotten the ball a little bit more. The three balls fall for him at a high clip. I'm waiting to see defenses really, I guess, like, shift how they defend him from the perimeter and what that might open up for Toronto. Because it still doesn't feel like – it feels like his reputation doesn't match what he does. And, like, you normally see that with low-volume three-point shooters. But, like, OG will get him up. Like, even going back to that Bucks game, which was just weird. Toronto ended up losing that one. Like, he's knocking down contested shots. But it didn't feel like teams were, like, trying to run him off the line. Like, these are late closeouts that he's knocking down. It's like, when does he get treated like a knockdown shooter? Or will teams treat him like a knockdown shooter?
That's a good question. And part of me wonders, is he stuck in the, yes, you're knocking these down, but we're okay with you continuing to hit these phase? I don't want to say Grant Williams adjacent, but kind of in that, we need to take this away. And to take this away, that means you get to shoot.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to make enough to make us pay. And, you know, it's wild to say about someone who's shooting 51% from three in the month of March on six attempts.
Yeah, like, he's getting them up and knocking them down. That's what I'm just like. Like, if Scotty Barnes had that exact run, I was like, okay, it makes sense that they're just saying he's gonna miss at some point. Like, OG's on a run, and, like, this isn't the first year that OG has shot well from three on volume. And so that's why I'm just like, what is the disconnect? It may just be what you said. Like, okay, we know you can knock them down, but, like, we're more worried about this. And so if you beat us, fine.
Yeah, I think it's just that's the poison that teams are willing to give up, in a sense. We'd rather take away your drives or show help here and try and keep you off of that rhythm and force that and live with those results, then, you know, now we're staying at home. That opens things up for you in a different way. Now we end up doing what we wanted to do anyways. Now OG's hitting those threes, and now we've given up both. That'd probably be my beat on it. How do you feel about the non-Pirtle lineups?
How do I feel about the non-Pirtle lineups? That's a good question. I was going to be, like, irresponsible and just parlay that into a second unit tangent with Toronto.
That's what I was hoping for. I was running pick and roll.
Yeah. Knowing your personnel, man. Thank goodness for Jakob Poeltl, because what they've gotten from backup center this year has honestly made me sad. And this is not a give up on this guy or anything of the sorts. Let me preface that early. Precious has just been bad. And a lot of that is because he just missed a whole bunch of time. Like, he's behind the eight ball. And I honestly feel like that's just a catching up period. In addition to him being raw on top of that. Like, I think that's all it is. But you really feel it now. Because at least early on when he got back, it was part of, okay, we don't really know what we're getting from center. Or if we're even playing a center. And so sometimes Precious hits, sometimes he doesn't. Fine. We got Christian. Now we don't got Christian. Okay, fine. Got that. That's out of rotation now. All right, fine. Whatever. Now that you're just getting solid play from Jakob Poeltl, whenever he's out there, you feel it when Precious comes in and he's all over the place defensively. Or it's get the ball at the elbow and instead of flowing into something, he's trying to attack. And it's like, oh, he's still playing catch up right now, which is why I'm not, like, down on him long term. But his minutes has just been, they've been very harmful. And, like, I don't have the plus minus numbers in front of me, and not that that's the end all be all, but, like, I would imagine the Raptors have just been bleeding points in his minutes post All-Star break. Like, it just hasn't been good. And like, even Chris Boucher, who's naturally been like a boom or bust guy off the bench for them, like, it's felt more bust than boom for him lately as well. And it also just goes into the Nick Nurse conundrum that we've been talking about throughout the year. Like, hey, he probably shouldn't play as starters this much. Also, who do you trust on the bench? I don't know the answer to that. And he doesn't either. And that's how we end up with Jeff Doughton in the rotation sometimes, or Delano Benton in the rotation sometimes. Here's Malachi Flynn for the third Tuesday in February. And then here's 39 minutes for Fred VanVleet. I don't know what you do. Like, the only reliable bench player it feels like is Gary Trent Jr., who to his credit has continued to knock down threes at a high clip since going to the bench full time. Like, after that, like, I definitely don't know what you're getting from the backup front court. Like, backup point guard, we've talked about, but there are enough ball handlers that you can parse through between Fred, between letting Scotty Barnes run the show, between letting Pascal run things. Like, you can at least band-aid it to that degree. But, like, I just don't know who the reliable backup big is for Toronto. And that's a problem. Is that ranty enough? I wonder. Sprinkling in, didn't want to be too harsh, but like, it has been great.
No, that's just about what we were looking for. So, who do you think their best matchup is in the play-in?
Best matchup in the play-in.
Now, as you ponder that, I believe they are 1-2 against the Hawks this year, 2-1 against the Heat, 3-1 against the Bulls. If my math is off, my bad.
Okay,
I looked it up real quick.
Okay. Well, I mean, my answer was going to be Miami, because I think the defense has been pretty reckless for Toronto this year, like, just scheme-wise. That's what they do. They want to run around, use their limb to bother you. And, like, it's helpful that it's been statistically good post-All-Star break. But, like, with what Miami's offense has been this year, like, I think they are even more empowered to fly around and send extra help. Because, like, well, shoot, if we mess this up, who's beating us from three? Gabe Vincent this year? This year's Max Strus, et cetera, et cetera. So, like, I think that's probably their best one. I will say those matchups are just naturally nasty. And I am still having nightmares about that night in Miami where I was at that, I think, triple overtime game between the Heat and the Raptors. And good God, like, great game. However, I had a flight the next morning that was troublesome. But anyway, no, those matches are always physical and nasty. And so, like, I don't think those teams would want to see each other just for the pure physicality of it. But in terms of Toronto can win, like, I think Miami's their best bet.
A quick correction. It's 2-1 in Chicago, not 3-1. Sorry, y'all. A secondary follow-up question. How important is 8 for Toronto in this scenario? They are 23-13 at home. They are 12-24 on the road. They have less road wins than the Orlando Magic. Only one more than the Charlotte Hornets.
Yikes. Well.
And do you view them as more built for the play-in or more built for the playoffs?
Because I still feel like I'm in a weird place with the offense, like, this feels more built for the play-in than playoffs. Like, I think they have the bodies and they have the defensive versatility to bother, at least annoy, just about anyone they face in the first round. But I still worry about what the offense is going to look like. And, like, even to the Pascal front, I forgot to mention this a little bit earlier. Again, the starting lineup with Fred VanVleet, Scotty Barnes, OG Anunoby, Pascal Siakam, and Jakob Poeltl has been very good. It's a plus, nearly a plus 12 net rating in almost 200 minutes for this group. That's been one of the most effective lineups in the NBA post-All-Star break. With Pascal Siakam, when he's in that group, he has shot 41.1% on two-point shots and a shade under 23% on threes. A 41 true shooting percentage when he's playing with that starting lineup. Like, the sample size will grow, and I would imagine he would knock down more jumpers. Like, he's not going to be that. But it's been bad with him trying to figure out, like, where he fits in and where he gets his best looks within that group. And so in a playoff series, as they're trying to sort that out, like, I just feel bad with him trying to, like, what does that series look like against Philly somehow? Well, yeah, Philly's 2, if they're able to get to 7 or something. Like, if they get Philly and Joel Embiid just get like to say, I get to stand here.
Like it did last year?
Like they, I guess among the top three, like they probably feel best against Milwaukee. Like even then, like that's, it's going to be, that's, it's just kind of, it's tough for them offensively. Like I worry about the offense, and then like they've been playing a playoff rotation for most of the year anyway. And so I just wonder what that looks like in the actual postseason if they get there.
I mean, it's going to be interesting. They also can be very annoying defensively, especially if they're locked in. They have size, they have length, they have switchability. They should have some scheme versatility. You do wonder, do they have enough offense? Can they handle whatever teams are going to throw at Pascal? What's that do to them? But I'm intrigued. I'm back on the Toronto could be annoying train at the very least. I don't know what it means, but they definitely turned it around for me.
I got you. A quick but broad question before we move to Chicago. How have you felt about the growth of Scottie Barnes this year? Just can't leave a Toronto question without talking about Scottie.
You said you can't leave a Toronto question without talking about Scottie.
Yeah, you know, I guess in a literal sense, I could not leave the conversation without talking about Scottie. But no, but no, how have you felt about his growth?
I feel like he's on the right track. He's grown in the areas he needs to. He's stayed aggressive. I think some of the early play was overblown. We've seen the playmaking. We've seen the defense. He's continued to show what he's done already. And like that's the part where I was like, why is the noise so loud around Scottie Barnes right now? I don't understand. Was I missing something?
Like I don't
point to anything and think he got worse. Like
I think my only count, well, not even a counter. Like I think in the early portion of the season, it was fair to argue that the defense had regressed. But I think that's really the only thing I could even point to, because like he's had to toggle between multiple roles in the first portion of the year. And then we got to the part where teams were like, all right, we're just going to put our center on him. Have fun with that. And he solved that relatively quickly. Like, oh, fine, you're giving me space. And I can also get my teammates open too. So I can make my teammates better in a different way. That's fine. I'll flow into these handoffs. I'll set these screens. And it worked. Like, you're still waiting on the jumper to come around a little bit more. But, like, even then, like, the comfort in the post is still there. If anything, it's growing. Like he is willing to take threes from the corner and do so against soft contest. So like I'm with you. Like I feel like it's going in the right direction. The defense is what I continue to keep an eye on. Like that feels very much matchup based. If he's on wings or forwards or even centers, like I'm okay. Like there will be some matchup that he loses just because of who he's facing. But like conceptually, I'm fine. I'm just kind of overseeing Scottie on guards. I think is where I land with him.
Why?
Over-eager and doesn't slide well enough to contain them, I think is where I land. Like, I think if you're putting him on a guard, like, you want him to use his limb, like, give the gap and then contest. And it feels like a lot of, let me pick this dude up at half court, and then he's now having to navigate a screen, and he isn't great at that. And so you're missing the point of having him out there. Because I would think, like, that just makes him a switch piece. But if you're getting blasted, it's two on the ball because you got caught up on the screen because you're pressuring 40 feet from the basket. And then you're opening up the thing that you were trying to avoid to begin with.
Which is interesting. I feel like his on-ball defense was stronger than his off-ball defense last year. So just guards. Like shifty point guards or?
Yeah, shifty point guards for sure. I haven't liked him at the point of attack this year.
I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, that's fun, man. Like I think if he can use his strength, like I think that's where he's best at.
Okay.
Get him in space. It's been wonky this year. Like maybe he develops into that true like 1-5 switch piece that you feel okay with. But that certainly hasn't been the case for me this year when I've seen him. But offensively, like I'm glad. Like it's been nice to see him problem solve. And like this is where you send out the generic reminder, like, hey. Like, as you always say, growth isn't always linear. He's in year 2, So because he didn't become a superstar in year two, it doesn't mean he's a failure, that he's a bust, or that he's overrated or anything like that. Like, it just takes time sometimes.
No, you're right. Now, to your point about the screen navigation, he's got too much size and they have too much length for that to be as big of an issue as it should be. But it always goes back to my problem with Toronto, where it's just like, okay, are you guys switching? It looks like you're switching. You're not switching. Mm-hmm. And I feel like sometimes when Scotty's guarding, he gets screened and then, well, it's a switch. Oh, well, I'm stuck. Well, it's a layup. That's what it's
and you
like,
can't man. Give those up.
Yeah, so I'm not sure.
I got you. He shall be fine. Let's move to the Chicago Bulls. I will concede the floor to you. You were very excited to talk about the Bulls heading into this podcast. So,
what have you seen? What you mean, Nikias? Respect them.
Yeah, they've been good. They've been very good. 7-4 since the All-Star break. They are the only team in the NBA that ranks in the top five in both offensive rating and defensive rating post All-Star break. You can sprinkle, if you extend it out to top 10 in both, that you put Phoenix into the fray, you put New York to the fray, Milwaukee in there, and also Cleveland, which Cleveland is such an interesting team that's just been in the top four all year, but that's not for this podcast. But no, I'll concede for you. What have you liked from Chicago as they've just looked the best among the playing group so far?
Well, I listened to you talk about the Thunder. Since January 1st, you know who's second in the NBA in defensive rating?
Who would that be?
Chicago Bulls.
Ah.
Throwing it out there. What I've really liked about the Bulls is it's really the move they made when they got Patrick Beverley and they said, hey, we're going to start Pat Bev, we're going to start Caruso, DeMar, Zach, and Vooch, you guys figure it out. And I want Lonzo to be healthy. That's more important than anything. Without Lonzo, it appears they pretty much just said, hey, let's try and get as much as we can out of what he brought to the table. Pat Bev, Caruso, you guys defend your tails off. Knock down some shots, move the ball. DeMar, Zach, and Vooch, it's on y'all. There's no more excuses that y'all do things offensively. You have no choice. You have no choice. Teams are going to help. Those two are going to move the ball when they're not shooting. It's coming back to you. Y'all got to make plays. But the weird part about that kind of hierarchy is you are seeing more aggression from Vooch and LaVine. Vooch has been humming for a while now, but LaVine has been particularly insane over this stretch, which is allowing him to be used in different ways. It's not just pick and roll or bust. You can use him off staggers now, which is important for a Bulls team that was looking for movement. And with those staggers, it's not just a pull-up three. It's those drives. I don't know what Zach LaVine did, but those drives right now, buddy, he is getting downhill. He is playing with aggression. I believe for the month of March, averaging 32.1 points, 53% from the field, 47% from three, 90% from the line. 50-49 is pretty good, right?
I will check with my sources, but I am indeed hearing that that is pretty good.
Yes. Okay, thank you. I'll double check that, get a review in later. So when he's playing like this, it makes it so much easier. Obviously, teams can still play off Caruso and Beverly. To me, there's a slight difference. That's not new for those two. That's not going to affect their confidence. That's not necessarily going to throw the offense out of rhythm. And that's no shade to Io and Pat Will, but they're trying to navigate that. These two know. All right, cool. You're going to help off me? I can cut. I can move the ball. I can swing. Extra pass. Drive and kick. I might not couple down. It may lead to some we haven't scored in 3 minutes stretches. But there seems to be more of a comfort to it. I know that sounds insane analysis, but stick with me. I just like the combination that they have. It feels like they're more free. And then defensively, you can see there's more trust and more activity with LaVine, with Vooch, with DeMar, knowing we have these two flying around. So not only are they taking some of the on-ball matchups, but yeah, Vooch can be at the level and slide a couple extra times because he knows if the weak side is Caruso and Patrick Beverley, someone's going to be in, someone's going to rotate out, the other person's going to rotate out, we'll be good. And that's a really important thing defensively. Trust is key. Once trust is lost defensively, that's when you start to see errors that no one really talks about. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm trying to get out because I know they can't rotate and all that stuff is important. It just feels better. And just the way that they're using Pat Bev and Caruso on different sides of the floor. And now DeMar might have some, he might get it to Levine. And Levine's not just waiting and holding, waiting for a screen. It's a drive. Drive and kick. Keep it moving. Mm-hmm. So now they're achieving that tempo. They're getting those stops. They're able to run in transition. They're able to get into secondary flow. They're able to do what they were trying to do. Now I don't know what it means.
I love that's just the theme of the play. So, okay, so here are the things that they can do well. I have no idea if it matters. However, comma.
But at the very least, it's nice to see Chicago be able to hit their vision and have those plays where now they're flowing into, you know, Vooch handoff with DeMar, pick and roll, hit Levine. Maybe we hit Vooch rolling. Now you got, we can put pressure on you that way. And that's the funny part. Because they have Pat Bev and Caruso on the floor, they got to do that. Because those two, you want them on the strong side if you can.
So, buddy, if not.
You three don't have a choice but to play with each other. Figure it out. But no, yeah, that's my point. I think it's at least good to know that there's something in the vision, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And they at least can build that. And for not for nothing, if you take what Io and Pat Roy have done and you say, hey, do that, you have a little bit more freedom off the bench. Just go play. Now maybe you get some combinations. Mm-hmm. I've enjoyed watching the Bulls during the stretch.
It shows. It shows. First, good stuff. Two, like, I think the Levine portion and the vets, like you hit on it, so I'm not going to hang on there too long. But like, I think that's been what's popped for me the most when watching the Bulls. Like there's just, and even I guess putting all three of those together, like there's just a level of decisiveness that you've seen from this Bulls team that I think breeds well for what they want to do. Like Zach catching and immediately driving. One, he's really good at it. Like the knees seem healthy. Like the and ones are back. The tough contested finishes are back. Like the burst in general is just back. And that opens up so many things for him. But beyond that, like, as you mentioned, like kicking it to Pat Bev if he space, like, all right, I'm firing immediately or I'm driving immediately. With Caruso, I am driving immediately or I'm flowing into a handoff immediately. It was fun doing a little bit of pod prep. Like, if I remember, I don't have the exact number now. I should have written it down. But like Caruso and Patrick Beverly have combined for 500 on ball screen set since the All-Star break. And so, like, even that's a way for Chicago to be like, okay, like, we don't have to space y'all. Like, we can just very quickly, I'll bring it up. Pat Bev, come screen for me. I'm going to attack. And because they're doing so more quickly, defenses are more likely to get in rotation. They're able to play out of that. Like, the ball, like, that's probably been the most fun of watching Chicago when the ball is pinging around, which very dull analysis. But watching them do that at home in particular, where you got Stacey King yelling about it and you got the crowd amped up, and it's just like, it's just beautiful basketball being played right now. And I really like the level of decisiveness that I've seen from Zach, what I've seen from Caruso, who still doesn't shoot enough. Like, you would still like that aggression to perk up a little bit more. Like, we've seen him have stretches where he's shooting well from the corners at the very least. So you would like to have that as a relief valve at some point. But he's doing enough as a driver, as a handoff guy, and as a screener to where you can make that work. And then defensively, I can't remember if it was here or during the watch party where I asked you about where you had Caruso in terms of all defense. Like, I'm ready to put him on the first team. Like, that's a real discussion to be had, I feel like. He's been wild all year long, and it's kind of gone under the radar just because the Bulls have been a mess for most of the year. But he's been wild. The amount of the ball pressure in general is wild, but the plays that he makes off the ball, drawing charges, playing the passing lanes, even if Chicago's trying to scram Vooch out of something or they're just trying to scram someone out of something, period, like his ability to communicate and rotate on time on target has been very impressive. And you've seen that pop post All-Star break as well. Like, he's been all over the place. And I also like the point you made about the young guys going to the second unit. Like, I think that's really shown through for Patrick Williams as well. And like, that growth has been there throughout the year where he's getting a little bit more comfortable with the ball in his hands. He's getting a little bit more comfortable shooting against a soft closeout, getting a little bit more comfortable just getting the ball up, period. And now you give him a second unit to where if they're forced to turnovers, he's able to get out and run. I like the trust that Chicago's giving him, like, oh, you're on the left side of the floor. We're going to swing it to you. Here, take it. Here's a possession. Do something with it. And he can get to a pull-up or he can just face up and pull up against someone. The high release point is there. The touch is there. Like, you see it building with him. And I'm curious to see, like, if we reach a point where he goes back into the starting lineup, because I think he's good enough to start. And I wonder if they need, if they are able to make it through the play-in, or even if you look at some of these play-in matches, if they just need more size, period. And you want to either bring Pat Bev off the bench, or if you want to bring Caruso back off the bench, and like, he probably still closes. But if you just want to match up, like, Pat Wills seems like someone that can still move up into that role. Like, he's just played well. And I've enjoyed what I've seen from him. While we're kind of on the second unit, Coby White, quietly playing well, quietly knocking down threes at a high clip. It's been nice to see him find a role. Like, that was a question that I had as they brought Pat Bev in. Like, hey, he's a lot of guards. What exactly is going to happen with Coby White? He's seizing the moment with the minutes that he's getting right now. So I want to give him props for that as well.
How do you feel about the Bulls overall? You have been very, 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 very honest about your feelings.
Why you said it like that?
And I just want to check in and see, do you see the vision? Does it look all right? Is it just okay? It's just not bad. Is this a team you want to see in the play-in? Where are you at?
Like I said, like, Chicago has unequivocally, if I can speak, they've been playing better than anyone else in this play-in range by a pretty substantial margin. I do indeed see the vision. I would not want to see Chicago. It's funny that we've had this entire Chicago section. We're talking about how well they're playing. Like, DeMar's been like a footnote in this discussion. It's wild to have him as the, oh, wait, all this movement stuff didn't work. Pump fake free throws. Pump fake hand and face mid-range jumper cash. It feels good that he feels like a bonus right now. Which is wild, because he's still probably just their best player. At worst, he's their second best player. But, like, in theory, this is what DeMar was supposed to be. Like,
yeah.
I think...
Yeah, let me get these buckets real quick, bud.
Yeah, like, what DeMar was last year, and he was insane, All-NBA, All-Star, all of that. Like, he wasn't supposed to be carrying the ridiculous load that he was last year and bailing Chicago out in clutch game after clutch game after clutch game. Like, in theory, we've already built this with Zach. He's continuing to get better. Zach can drive. Zach can operate a pick and roll. Zach can come off ball. Booch, we can post him up. We can use him as a hub. We can pick and pop, whatever. DeMar, assassin. And it turned into DeMar please save us. During this stretch, it's felt more like Booch is humming. Zach has been insane. Role players filling in. If all else fails, final boss DeMar DeRozan. And that's a fun place for Chicago to be in right now. So I would say, like, I'm feeling pretty good about him. Like, as we've talked about Chicago throughout the year, like, hey, what's going on with the offense? Why does it feel like this? Whatever, whatever. The defense has been top 10 all year. And, like, that didn't make much sense to me early on in the year. And as it continued to go on, like, okay, no, this is just what they do. Like, they're just fine. And, like, they've gotten better as they've added Pat Bev into the fray. And so, like, I feel like the foundation's pretty strong. Like, it stinks that they got out to the start that they did, because I think they would just be, like, 5 or 6 if they didn't. But no, this is not a team that I would want to see, provided that they stay healthy. And I will echo your earlier sentiment. Like, I want Lonzo to get back right. But no, like, I feel good. Like, this has been a really enjoyable stretch of Chicago Bulls basketball. They deserve the love. So I guess outside of these four, because they are the four teams in right now, any hope for you for Indy, or what is your faith level in Indiana making a push to get into 10?
I think they could. Now, the thing is, someone's going to have to slip. They're going to need Chicago to slip back a little bit, and they're going to need Tyrese Haliburton to get healthy. Because they could score. We talked about last game, they could score. And that also is not a fun team that you want to play in this type of scenario, because they're going to score. I just don't know how much time they have left. And I think probably the two teams that are playing the iffiest have the leg up on them. So they're going to need a run. They're going to need a run. Like, let me look at their schedule real quick. And you're setting me up for the Wizards. I know you are. I see the vision. I mean, Indiana just needs to hope they don't see Philly ever again, honestly.
I know they've been.
At Charlotte, at Toronto, at Boston, at Atlanta. Well, I'm no mathematician. but they got a little bit of destiny over there in their hands. So maybe.
Indiana and Washington are both 32-39. Pacers have some sort of tiebreak over Washington. But they're only a game and a half behind Chicago. So they're not far out. Like, they could either team could make a run and get in because they're not far off. With the Pacers, like, it's just been a stretch without Tyrese Halliburton, and I'm not sure when he comes back. And if he doesn't come back, then I just don't see it, just to be frank about it. And it also doesn't help that during this stretch of games that Tyrese Halliburton has missed, like, they've also had a game or two without Miles Turner. They've also had games without Benedict Mathurin. They're just losing a lot of scoring punch. And, like, this is a team that flies around, so they can still get the ball up. But it's just not the same. And they need it to be – they can't just be good offensively. They have to be elite offensively to counter what the defense is. And trying to defend with the healthy group has been a struggle. Trying to defend when Miles Turner hasn't been there has definitely been a struggle. And so, like, I don't know if Indiana makes the push just because of health. We can now transition into Washington if you'd like. Like, where is your faith level? Have you been called for the foul yet? Are you still in the air? Like, what's happening?
I'm on the bench. I fouled out.
Now you fouled out. That's tough.
Yeah, man.
That's just it.
Yeah. That's where I'm at.
Unfortunate. Can I ask you a quick Denny question?
What's that?
Are there any concerns at all with him as he's been moved to the second unit? And just in general, like, how do you feel about Denny season?
Concerns overall or concerns for him in Washington?
I would say overall.
No. I think he's still shown over the course of the year a level of regression. You would have liked to see a little bit more once they made the Rui move. So that part's been a little bit weird. Oh, my bad. You'd like to see a little bit more of it because you saw him come out of the shell a little bit. You saw more aggression, some more on-ball reps, and then it's kind of just like, oh, we're going backwards. But the tough part is I feel like Denny plus good team is still on the table at some point. And then he'll look like a completely different player. So I'm kind of TBD right now. I don't think the context is helping him the best.
I got you. Like, the context has been a little bit questionable for what he is right now and some of his limitations. And I think what's kind of bothered me is seeing some of the aggression go away. I don't think that could afford to go backwards because that was already in the place where you need to lift it up. And so, like, even... you mentioned no Rui, but like even being moved to the second unit, like you would hope, okay, fine. Like I'm not playing alongside Brad and KP, et cetera, et cetera. So like I don't have the same advantages to attack a scrambling defense. I should be able to get the ball in my hands a little bit more. Like what does downhill Denny look like? Is there more juice there? And like that just hasn't really been the case, at least in the Wizards games that I've caught. And then you look at just the numbers and like the scoring efficiency post All-Star break for him, like it's just been bad across the board. And so that's where I'm just like, hey, what's happening here? Should we be concerned? Is this just a weird end to the season? Because like players can have those and he ends up fine next year. So I just kind of wanted to gauge your thoughts on that and see where you were with him. Any other East team? Do you want to touch briefly on Brooklyn? Since, I mean, they're not in the play-in, but they're only, what, a game ahead of Miami right now? Into the Monday slate?
I do wonder what that's going to look like. Mm-hmm. Can Brooklyn hang on? Because I think they definitely want to firmly be in. And that's no disrespect, but I don't know how much they would love to be in a elimination-type deal with this current roster. So I'm monitoring how they keep handling these switches. What kind of shots can they create? And can they kind of form a defensive identity and use the wings to their advantage? Or are they going to be chasing?
Mm-hmm. I got you on that. Like for me, it's definitely, you mentioned the switching, like that's going to be important. I think just the creation in general, like it's been fun to track what Mikal's been doing, but like to steal your line. Like, I don't know what it means. It's kind of where I'm starting to land with some of the more recent Brooklyn games when they aren't just fed advantages. And also just, I guess, on the creation front, just keeping an eye on Spencer Dinwiddie. Because, like, this hasn't been, like, I thought he would play with more freedom. And he has played with more freedom. like it certainly hasn't hit to the level that you would need it to for Brooklyn. It's like, even with the Mikael Bruce, like, is Mikael like a tier A star shot creator? Like, no, he's not that yet. Like, the efficiency numbers have screamed at for most of the time he's been in Brooklyn. But like, in terms of how defenses guard him and like what he does to defenses to manipulate them, like, he's not there yet. And like, Spencer Dinwiddie isn't that guy either, but like, we've at least seen straight runs for him where he can dictate things. And it hasn't been that. And so like, you need either another mini leap from Mikael to kind of tie that over, or you just need better play from Spencer. Because ultimately, like, even if it isn't switching, like, they just have to figure out the half court thing, period, with this group. It's a lot of like size bodies and a lot of guys that know what to do when defense is scrambled, but like, that initial puncture has to be there. And I do think like Spencer is the best, like, drive all the way to the rim guy that they have in the starting lineup. And so you kind of need him to act as the head of the snake in that way. And like, that hasn't been the case for me. Do you think Brooklyn slides? I guess we can cap it there for flowing into free throws.
Do I think they slide? You trying to get me to wish on their downfall?
No.
What type of podcast is this?
I'm just asking a question. Do you think they slide to six? I mean, to seven.
I don't right now. I'm just looking, trying to look at their schedule real quick. They've lost three in a row. Ooh, two games against Cleveland, at Miami, at Orlando. They could.
Yeah, it gets kind of, yeah.
They could.
It gets kind of tough.
It could go either way.
Oh, boy.
If they lose those two to Cleveland, then you got to go to Miami and try and figure that out. That's going to be interesting. So ask me next week.
Okay. Well,
ooh, two games against Cleveland and at Miami and Orlando. That's a back-to-back. Yeah, definitely ask me. Let's circle back and...
He's like, wait a minute. Finger to earpiece. Hold on. I'm being informed that their schedule is tough.
Now, here's the thing. That also means that all these other teams have to do the thing, mainly Miami. So, to be determined.
Yeah, because as we saw in the Detroit game, and again, Miami won the Detroit game. However, when I saw that score, because it was the game I was watching live, when I saw that score graphic, it was like keeping it close from the Heat account, and the Pistons were up after one, I was like, y'all got to be kidding me, dog. ain't no way y'all about to do this right now. Y'all ain't about to try to sneak this in during tournament weekend while at Miami College is succeeding right now. But anyway, that's enough on Miami. Steve, do you have free throws?
Yeah, let me get my free throws out the way, man.
All right.
We're going to go with a little play-in, most important version.
Okay.
Who's more important, Kevin Love or Kyle Lowry?
Kyle Lowry for me.
Really? A little bit of an upset.
They need the guards to pop.
Okay. Bogdan Bogdanović or John Collins?
Wow. Probably Bogey at this point.
Okay. Gary Trent Jr. or Precious Achiuwa?
I guess Gary, because he's better in the movement shooting. I was going to say Precious just because the backup play has been so bad that if he pops, like, it might take him to another level by default. But they could also just say, all right, we're going to play Pascal at the five again or OG at the five again. So we'll go with Gary.
Patrick Williams or Patrick Beverley?
Williams.
Okay.
He's still the wing size guy defensively. Like, Caruso's great. He's still a guard size. He's still guard size. Pat Bev. The irritant's still small. Like, they need Pat for some of those wing matchups.
Okay. A shout out to Brian. He provided me this free throw on the Bird app. Is Rick Carlisle the only coach in the league who wouldn't trade Tyrese straight up for Luka?
Wow.
Actually, I guess who wouldn't trade anyone straight up for Luka?
I'm trying to think if there's another coach that had Tyrese who would he prefer him over. Now Rick might be the one.
Okay. Jamal Crawford or Lou Will?
Like, all time or?
Yes.
Okay. Probably Lou. At least I get free throws.
Happy birthday, Jamal Crawford.
I see.
More,
what a setup.
All right. What's a stronger take or a better take? Russell Westbrook is not good, or Russell Westbrook should just be Jason Kidd the rest of the way.
I'm sorry. Wouldn't it buy me again?
Russell Westbrook not good at basketball, or Russell Westbrook turning into what Jason Kidd was at the end of his career.
What's a worse take?
Yeah.
Because I'm trying to imagine Russell Westbrook attempting to play like Jason Kidd in those late years. As I answer the question, hold on. What was Jason Kidd's three-point rate during that title year with Dallas? Wait a minute. Because that's also going to change. If you're telling me, hey, bro, we need 60% of your shots to be threes, and we see how Russ shoots right now, I don't know if I like that. So when he won the title, 66%? No. The worst take is the Jason Kidd thing. I don't think Russell Westbrook is bad, to be clear, but no, worst take is play like J. Kidd. That man had a near 66 three-point rate. And if Russell Westbrook took 66% of his shots from three-point land, buddy, you would believe that he was bad. So I guess the answer would be yes.
How much fun has Markelle Fultz been to watch this season?
This feels like bait, but very.
It's not. Did he make your top 75 most improved players on the low post?
You know what? Unironically, he was on the list.
Oh, okay.
And
Jeremiah Robinson Earl and Daniel House. Yeah.
Daniel House needs to improve, but no, that's not.
Doc Rivers says he's sick of the tearing one guy down to build up another, wants everyone to be celebrated, and they're all great players. Is he a confirmed dunker?
Not with these lineup choices. No, no, can't say he is.
Man took my take.
He was right.
Would you argue that Drew Holiday has been the Bucks' best player this season?
I love doing a podcast with you as long, because like my first question was related to that clip.
Ha!
So that's amazing. No, respectfully, I would like to disagree with that basketball take.
All right, and here's my follow-up question.
Okay.
Would you keep the same energy if KG was here?
Well, hey, dog. Got to get all the superlatives out the way. So you've made more money than I ever will. You are better at basketball than I have ever been, et cetera. However, I don't think. Nah, he threw in the, you know, Giannis been out the lineup. And I was like, brother, do you know how many games Drew is? But yeah, I can't say that I agree with that one. I'm sorry.
Nah, that's when you just hit him with a hey, man. You just go to a different question. brighter future for Tristan Thompson, Lakers big or TV analyst?
God, nobody. Oh, geez. I mean, he can still screen. Let's say basketball.
Oh, wow. All right. Has the women's tournament been better than the men's tournament?
Yes.
Yes, it has. Also, don't do the thing every March when the dudes stop playing. You say there's no March Madness games on. It's not true. There's some really good ones on. Ohio State did a great job. Anyways, that's all I got.
Okay. Let me get to some of these. I guess I'll go with the KG question. Because I knocked that one out the way now. my question was simply, why did KG set up Drew like that?
Because he sees that dog in him.
Okay. Rank these award races by closeness. MIP, DPOY, Rookie of the Year.
Rookie of the Year is third. MIP is second. DPOY is one.
Okay.
Rookie of the Year is, I'm sorry, y'all. It's Paolo. It's Paolo.
Okay.
We can get old J-Dub in there, number two. I feel you.
Okay.
And then the most improved, I mean, it should be one of the Lowry, Shea, whatever one of them folks is. But then you had to do it, your shenanigans.
Shenanigans.
Now we got Emmanuel Quickly talk when I couldn't even get a Desmond Main shout out last year.
Brother, you gave the Desmond Main shout out last year. And I remember saying, hey, those are good players. That's a good list.
Ja Morant. That's what you said.
That was my list, but your choices were also good. I didn't say Desmond Bane. That's terrible. He ain't in my top 40 set. Like, that's not what I said. But anyway, Joel Embiid has scored 30 or more points in 9 straight games. His next 5 games, Chicago at home, Chicago on the road, Golden State on the road, at Phoenix, at Denver. Barring injury, does the Embiid streak end in any of those games?
What you going to do for the 30 ball? No.
Okay, 30 and no. All 5 of those, huh?
Yeah, especially Denver. Oh.
But what do you... What is your reaction to if we get like the 22 points on 8 of 19 shooting from Embiid against Denver? What do we do with that?
Don't worry about my reaction. Just open up the Bird app. They'll tell you.
There we go. Okay. Where are you at with Evan Mobley and Jared Allen for all defense?
Great season, wrong year.
Ah, I see.
Conversely, it's not that they're not deserving, but when the Depoy race is essentially 3 bigs. Sorry.
I see. Related note, who is Cleveland's best defender?
I should pump fake and say Isaac Okoro.
Ah, I see.
It's Evan Mobley.
Okie dokie. Who is Cleveland's 4th best defender?
Donovan Mitchell.
Huh, okay. Over under 1.5 award selections for the New York Knicks this year.
Does all NBA count?
Yes.
Under.
Okay. Is it just Julius?
Yep.
Okay.
Unless I'm missing someone.
6 man of the year heating up. Yeah, that's all.
Whom?
Emmanuel Quickly.
All right, now I'm about to do a search real quick before you ask your next question. I'm about to see what you said about Emmanuel Quickly last year. Because it wasn't this. We're going to talk about this, man. No.
It wasn't last year. You clowned me last year because I was so enamored with the second unit for the Knicks.
No, I clowned you because you were enamored with, never mind. It's fine.
All right.
I'm going to find these Quickly takes. Don't worry. Tune in next week, folks. Man, we're going to get to the bottom of this.
All right. Happier with their role, Mitchell Robinson or John Collins?
Man, that's a tough one. I guess John Collins by default because he didn't put anything on the internet recently.
Ah, I see. Better season this year, Stephen Curry or James Harden?
Disgusting work you just did right there. Absolutely disgusting work that you just did. Why'd you do that to me?
I'm just asking a question.
Why you do that?
I'm just asking.
Yuck. Man. Dog. Well.
Go ahead.
Ooh. I'm gonna go. Yes, set it out. I'm gonna go. I mean, Steph's almost shooting 50-40-90. James Harden's averaging 20 and leading the league in assists. What do you want me to do? What do you want me to do with this?
I just want you to answer the question, bud. That's all.
Hit me with the bud, too.
Shout out, Matt.
I knew what he did. Give me Steph.
Okay. Jaylen Brown or DeMar DeRozan?
DeMar.
Okay. Mikal Bridges or Brandon Ingram?
This year, Mikal Bridges.
Okay. Last question for me. Better push, Washington for the play-in or Dylan Brooks?
You can't do that. It's Dylan Brooks. But man, no, I'm not falling for the Wizards pump fake. Go over the top rope. Dylan, man, you just got to hold your hand out next time. If you're going to do that, just hold your hand out. Just pause. Make it look. Come on, man. Jeez Louise.
That is all.
Oh, I have a bonus free throw for you.
Okay.
So, when are you announcing the no post with no Kaius Duncan?
Oh, that's nasty work. That is nasty work. My name is just everywhere. It's just like, you know, you can look up what the name is, and you can just type the. Anyway,
no, they said them letters up there somewhere.
It wanted the vowels. I don't. All right, dog. The Wheel of Fortune is this. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean. Wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can follow me on Twitter at NikiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community. We are having fun discussions in there. Join the Dunker Spot watch parties. We are having lots of fun, lots of analysis, lots of antics. We just had, what was it, a 12-hour watch party on Friday?
12 hours. We watched a little bit of everything, man. We was watching March Madness, men's, women's, some NBA. We watched SmackDown. Yeah, it was a lot. Yeah. We did a lot.
Was there some bowling mixed in at some point? Like, it was a whole... Yeah, we did a little bit of everything. Can't promise you those, because, buddy, that takes something out of you. But we are having lots of fun. You never know what's going to happen when you pop up in the room. We also never know what's going to pop up in the room. So... have some fun with us. I will have the link in the podcast description. It should be hyperlinked. If so, just click on that, enter your information. Very easy. It's free. No shenanigans. If not, just copy and paste the link into your browser. Again, it's free. It's easy. No shenanigans. And with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.
So this man is about to make me talk about the Thunder and the Lakers this week.